So this is a message from one of your pilots. You are now at day 3 of your journey to enlightenment. You have passed by the hindrances, and thus you are now hovering at an altitude of access concentration, where the first jhana awaits before you on our journey. And what is the foundation of this first jhana? Put on your thinking caps. It's thought itself. Vitaka vikara. There is no first jhana without learning how to think skillfully. So our thinking caps are on. Today we will discuss how to determine which are skillful thoughts that will help us move along in our journeys, and which are the thoughts that are roadblocks that will deter us from spiritual progress. Two novice monks are walking down the road, and they're having a debate, a Dhamma debate, because that's what we do all the time. We don't actually dance around the breakfast table, bump and grind. That would never happen. We talk about the Dhamma all the time to refine our wisdom.
Egos
and wisdom. So the novice monks are debating this Dhamma point, and they see the Ajahn. Was Venerable Ajahn Mahamaha, who I've had the opportunity to study with many times in my mind. They come up to Venerable Ajahn Mahamaha and they say, the first one says, "We're having a debate. I want to know, is it a right for me to smoke while I meditate?" The Ajahn recoils in horror. He says, "Have I taught you anything since you've been here at the monastery? That's terrible. How could you be so deluded?" And the first novice turns back and says, "See, that's the answer." Second novice says, "No, you asked the question wrong." He goes up to the Ajahn and he says, "Is it right if I meditate while I smoke?" The Ajahn says, "The light of the Buddha has shone on you. You have learned all, my son. You are on the verge." All in the way you look at things. Wisdom. What's the other one? A rabbi and a priest are in a plane, and the pilot says, "Uh-oh, the engines are gone. We only have 2 parachutes. Somebody is going to have to go down in flames." And the priest grabs one and says, "Sorry, boys, but I'm doing God's work." And he jumps out. And the pilot is startled. And the rabbi says, "Don't worry. God's messenger just jumped out of the plane with my knapsack." One last one on wisdom. The priest is sitting in his confessional and Moisha comes in. Moisha says to the priest, who's startled to see him through the sliding thing that they have in that thing that they're in. And, Moisha says, "I'm 91 years old. My My wife Ruth is 89. We've been married for nearly 70 years. And last week, I had sex with a 27-year-old who looked like a supermodel. And the priest says, why are you telling me this? Why don't you tell your rabbi? And Moshe says, telling you, I'm telling everybody. Thank you. I'll be in Goshen next week, but I'm too. That last one had nothing to do with thinking. So, and if you were wise, you would have known that. You would have said, all right, so now let's do the heavy lifting. Vitaka Santana is a sutta that's called How to Remove Obsessive Thoughts. Anybody need this one? There we go. So, it follows the Deva Vitaka, which is the 19th sutta in the Middle Length Discourses, and that's a sutta where the Buddha literally goes over the story of how that night he became enlightened. And it's really the only place where he goes into detail of what was the process of led him to the enlightenment stages of seeing all the chain of karma, and then seeing the mighty Four Noble Truths that releases one from samsara, or the cycle of suffering. So, in this tale of his enlightenment, the Buddha says, all I did was, after establishing my seat, I simply watched my mind come up with thoughts. And I asked myself, is this thought conducive to peace and lasting states of tranquility? Or is this thought conducive to stress, suffering, what's known as kriya, or mental agitation? In the previous sutta, the Buddha had introduced the concept of papancha, proliferation of thought. And he contrasts that with skillful thought, which doesn't repeat a lot, which doesn't yell at us, which doesn't talk down to us, which doesn't get caught up in self-centered reflection. But then there's papancha, the kind of thoughts that are obsessive, which are generally, the miracle growth of them is self-centeredness, and they tend to be repeating, and they tend to be separating, and they tend to tell us that we're unique and what we're experiencing is ours alone. So in the 19th sutta, the Buddha then says, well, I simply saw which thoughts were leading towards papancha, or, you know, self-centered proliferation, stress, body agitation, and I learned not to focus on them. And then I saw the thoughts that led to peace and wisdom and allowed me to stay present, to stay mindful. Which thoughts were tools in analyzing my current state and helped bring clarity to see the cause and effects of my results. These were the skillful thoughts that I maintained, the thoughts of peace, the skillful recollections. And we're going to talk about those thoughts today. Which are the skillful ones, and which are the unskillful thoughts, how to relate to them. So this sutta is called the Vitaka Santana, and it literally means the relaxation of obsessive thoughts, or thoughts that get in the way of our focus, our peace. So, the Buddha starts out by saying, when one is intent on developing peace of mind, there are five tools to be used at appropriate times. They are to be used with unskillful thoughts, distracting us from the intended focus of our attention. So there are times when we might want to turn towards these thoughts and see there's different tools. And this sutta really is about what Jack Kornfield called the persistent visitors. The ones that, the top five, top 10 songs in your head, the I suck. By the way, you suck. Oh, thank you. That was a nice tune. And here's another one. You suck. Oh, good. You're listening to WWE. You suck. And you're never going to do this. Well, oh, thank you. I heard that one. It sounded similar to the previous song. So we have these persistent visitors, these obsessions. The Buddha says we have, in fact, seven forms. They're called the anusayas, the obsessive thoughts. And there are seven. You don't have to write them down. When I read these lists to you, just think of them as stuff that you allow in. And as time passes in your spiritual journeys, they'll become more obvious and you'll just become very acquainted. You don't have to memorize them, but you'll have experienced them all. The first is greed for something that feels good. You know, we're uncomfortable. The food, can we have like a pizza lunch, you know, please? Can I watch a little TV just for a break? There's this craving for sensual pleasure. There's an aversion to whatever state we're in. You know, oh, this again. I'm walking around doing the walking meditation. Walking, please. Can't there be a different kind of meditation? This is terrible. I look like an idiot. I'm a zombie. I'm walking really slow. I'm going to walk a little faster. I hope nobody notices. We have skeptical doubt that we'll ever find peace. I love this one. Vichikichi. What are you in right now? I'm in Vichikichi. I'm never going to find peace. This is the doubt in the hindrances that Pablo was going over with us yesterday. So we all have this certain doubt. Oh yeah, the guy to the right over there, he's perfectly peaceful, never going to happen for me. There's a self-centered pride. I've got this down. I don't need to be here. I should be back, in fact, and my with my people spreading the Dhamma, because I've got it all. I know it. This is a special one for me. Ignorance of the causes of our suffering, the tendency to blame, you know, that person who snores in my next to me, they're a snorer. If they didn't snore, I would have achieved enlightenment by now. That's why I'm not enlightened, because the snorer, or the person who decided to sit to my left. Then there's the views and opinions. This retreat should have been scheduled entirely different. They should have 3 hours in the morning of naps, followed by 2 hours of massage. Massage, lobster meal. The way I would have scheduled it. And craving for states of existence, which means, oh, when I'm done with this, I will be enlightened. In just 4 more days, I will have achieved enlightenment. So those are the types of thoughts, the repetitive thoughts that come up, the obsessions that interrupt the mind. So now we're going to go into the tools for how to deal with our obsessive thoughts. And this sutta for me is one of the most, I have probably about a list of 20 that I really keep in my mind, but this one has been of such value to me. My journey as a practitioner. So the Buddha says, if unskillful thoughts arise, number one, attend to another thought that is skillful. In other words, replace whatever the obsessive thought with a thought that we can think that is skillful. And he says, just as a skilled carpenter or his apprentice would use a small peg to knock out a larger, ill-fitting peg, we use a skillful thought to knock out the unskillful ones. And the Buddha then points us towards the 10 recollections as being the foundation for skillful thoughts. So, You don't have to memorize the 10 recollections. I'm going to list them for you because I like to show off. But you can just find one amongst this list that really works for you and practice with that, with this one or two. The first three are what's known as the refuges. Buddhanusati, Dhammanusati, Sanghanusati, which means you can, when an obsessive thought about, oh, I'm never going to get this, or I can't stand the person that I'm, you know, sitting across from, or whatever, or I'm in love, you know, you can go to reflections of the Buddha, which is one person alone, pretty much, in a jungle, in India, eating one bowl of rice a day, having turned his back on everything that pretty much brought him any comfort in his life, all of his riches, all of his friendships, his family, without any real support even without the foundations of clothing and shelter, which he himself said was necessary. One man managed to find lasting peace within simply through the use of compassion and patience and practice and focus. And that this is available for all. Nobody is without the tools to develop inner peace. And just reflect, how did he do it? How does this apply to me? What am I not doing? What am I not working on? Dhammanusati means having a little section of the Dhamma that really, really resonates. That when the thoughts become really loud, the anger, the lust, the confusion, a little foothold of clarity. When I was working at times with depression, I would recite the Ratapala Sutta, which is, the world is swept away. Nothing will endure. There is no shelter. Nothing is secure. We own nothing. We can take nothing with us past death. And the world itself is not big enough to satisfy my craving. And I would just repeat this to myself. It's another way, it's a long-winded way of saying, this too shall pass. So you can say that too. Then there's Sanghanusati, which is reflection on all the other people here with you, all the other struggles, all the other small triumphs, the people who are working, no matter what they're facing in their life, who've come here, who are working diligently, struggling to try to cultivate a little corner of inner peace within, that we're not in this alone, that we are surrounded here by a strength of people who are undertaking the exact same struggles with the exact same goal. Santinusati is a reflection on the times that we have established peace in our own lives, that we have already, if we think back, found peace at times. That's why we're here, because we know that there is such a thing as mental tranquility, peace, calmness, happiness, joy, rapture, bliss. That at some point in our life, even in the Buddha's case, it was when he was 6 years old, he fell into a state of rapture when he was watching the fields being plowed. And many years later, when he was facing starvation alone, he remembered that one moment when he was 6 years old. He was like, oh yeah, I've been there before. And if I've been there before, I can get there again. So no matter what we're going through, no matter how loud the voices are, the thoughts are, how compelling, no matter how dark the projections are globalizing or personalizing the thoughts are, we have established peace. Maranasati is reflection on death for the goths in the crowd. No. It's simply a matter of seeing you're awake. Are you awake? Are you awake? Okay. No. It's a way to reflect that we have no guarantee that death can often come. Loss, grief, huge changes in life which take away the external pleasures that we've depended on can come at any moment. And would we be happy if what we've accomplished so far in our inner journey was stopped right here? Would this be enough? Or would I go to my death wishing that I had been more diligent, had tried a little harder? Deva Nusati is one I never think about. It's reflection on the devas, the angelic states. If they visit you, I encourage you to reflect on them. Sila Nusati is reflection on your virtue, the times that you could have broken the precepts, you could have stolen something, you could have killed an insect, you could have had sex in the behind the trees over there, probably. But you didn't. There's a saying that that one of my teachers has used, that if somebody offered me $1 million to kill someone, and I would say no, I would never kill someone for $1 million, then I have something worth $1 million. I have virtue, and that is without price. There's no amount of money that could get me to kill someone. So I have something that is beyond value, my virtue. Kaga Nusati is reflections on generosity, the times that you've been generous and the times that people have been kind to you. All these thoughts, like the Brahma Viharas, the divine abodes of Metta, Karuna, Pekka, you know, friendliness, compassion, all these thoughts produce peace in the body. They don't create agitation like self-centered papancha, which repeats itself with all its self-justifications and its smart little arguments about why we should get even and what's going to happen to me. All these thoughts, when we reflect on them, they create peace, a sense of ease within. So the second is investigate. We should scrutinize the thoughts. We should look deeply into them. And this goes something like, this thought I'm hearing right now, could I imagine myself saying this to someone I cared about? Would I knock on their shoulder and say, in a very nice voice, you really suck at this. And by the way, you suck a little more than when I just told you you suck. Would I tolerate somebody else following me around and tapping me on the shoulder? Oh, by the way, you suck. Oh, thank you. So nice. You just told me that 5 minutes ago. Plus, you're fat. If these thoughts are not what you would tell somebody else, then they're thoughts to establish what we call safe distance from. They're there, hello, oh yes, it's you. It's like the person, the insane person on the street. The Jews control the banking industry. I see you, Mara. Could I visualize the Buddha saying this? These are some of the ways of analyzing thoughts, Dhamma Vikaya, I've been taught over the years. This is Ajahn Jeff's favorite one. Ajahn Jeff always goes to the darkest, most unfun practice imaginable. He says, would I be comfortable if this was the last thought I ever had? Really? Okay, no, I wouldn't be, okay? Another one of his, would I be comfortable if a loudspeaker was in my head and everybody could hear that talk? No, not really. But it's worthwhile, you know. Why would I want to carry around in my head or give attention to thoughts that I would be ashamed if the world was being broadcast? Josh is now thinking how, you know, he deserves more fatty pizza today again. So does this thought grab my attention via sheer repetition? We can. One of my practices is I will listen to any thought so long as it agrees just to tell me once. But the moment it tells me twice, I don't listen. And I found over the years that my really spiritual, wonderful thoughts, the kind, generous, peaceful thoughts, they only talk to me once. And they talk to me very quietly. Hey, maybe you should call up your sponsee. It's like that. Like really quiet. Only once. But, you deserve a break today. Sirens, like those, you know, during elections with the cars with the loudspeakers. And they come with self-justifications. Come on, everybody else is doing it. That's why you have a right to. That's how they grab. So you notice, what is the tendency of the thoughts that are unskillful? You stand a little outside of them. You don't listen to the content as much as you notice. How do they speak? Do they repeat? Do they shout? Do they insult? Do they paint dire pictures of what's going to happen in the future that are unknowable from what you know right now? Oh, you've got cancer. But it's only a blemish. You've got cancer, I'm telling you. It's not even black. It looks like a mole. It's cancer. It's cancer of the knee. Is there cancer of the knee? It's cancer of the knee. So we investigate. So number three, in line with that, we practice not focusing our attention to these thoughts, just as a man with good eyesight. I love this one. Wait, what was number two? I didn't read you number two. Number two was, this is a great one. this is a great one. The Buddha says, when we come to investigating thoughts, just as one given to wearing jewelry would be dismayed if a necklace made from the corpse of a dog was offered. Yes, I like that. I like that. Oh, my God. Can I have you for all of these? That's great. I like it. Yeah! Unbelievable. That's awesome. I need that. When they wake me up in the morning to give these talks. Yeah! So if a dead dog is offered as a piece of jewelry. Anyway, so that's the way you invest. Is this good jewelry or bad jewelry?
You suck.
Number three. So, as a man with good eyesight, seeing an insane person would walk the other way. Just so we learn to focus our attention elsewhere, but to allow things to be. And one of my favorite examples, this is my, I love this story, Sakka's Angry Demon. You all heard it before, but allow an old man his pleasure. Which is, Sakka is away from the throne, and his attendants are left in charge, which is always a bad idea, as Noah will tell you. And at that moment, the angry demon comes in. It's very small. It sits on the throne. It's, you know, barking insults. And, you know, the attendants come in and they say, what's going on? There's a little demon here. And they say, they poke at it. And they say, get away, go away. You're unskillful. I don't want you here. And the throne is obviously a metaphor for our consciousness and the angry demon is a metaphor for giving you, you know, your, what you should already have figured out, is or as a metaphor for unskillful thoughts that come in. And so, and these attendants trying to resist it is a metaphor for the way we relate to our unskillful, persistent thoughts. We generally try to resist. We try to get rid of them. Why am I thinking this? I should be better. I should know more. And the demon, with each anger and resistance, gets bigger and bigger and bigger until it is breathing fire. It is ugly. It is dangerous and huge. And the attendants flee. Do the sound again.
Ah!
Priceless. Bringing him with me wherever I go. I love that. So Sokka comes back and he's like, what is going on here? And the attendants explain, and of course Sokka goes in and he is very courteous and he says, welcome, I am your servant. How can I, you know, make you comfortable? But when he doesn't follow or you know, do what the demon does, he just extends courtesy to allow him to be there. And as the demon shrinks and shrinks and shrinks, eventually Sokka takes him off and he scurries away. And the idea is that the way we relate to unskillful thoughts while not listening to them is we don't try to push them away. We don't try to run away from them, like, you know, completely avoid them or push them out. But we keep our distance after we say, hello, I see you. As Pablo was saying, hello, Mara. Hello, stress and suffering. I see you. You're there. You can be there, but I'm taking back the throne. I'm taking back my seat. There's an example of, I think it was Amaro used, where you treat thoughts like a video game. What was it, Pac-Man? Pac-Man, here I am explaining Pac-Man on a retreat. Pac-Man, you're trying to eat the good things, but you're trying to avoid the goblins. You're not denying that they're there, but you're constantly moving towards the food, the healthy focuses of attention, the healthy thoughts. So you're seeing what's there, you're allowing them to be there, you're not fighting them, because if you do, you're going into them and they'll take you over. It's an acknowledgement. The fourth is what we've been doing already. You already know this. This is called Anapanasati and Kayagatasati, what you've been doing for the first 2 days. You've been using the breath to relax the mind as well as the body. And when we use the breath skillfully, we focus the attention away from the thoughts and we're relieving the foundation of the thoughts themselves. Thoughts that are unskillful always arise conditioned on stress beneath them. They're always residing dependent upon inner tightness. In my case, whenever I'm worried about finances, which is Monday, Wednesdays, and Thursdays, it's basically my stomach gets tight and the neck muscles get tight. And if I, instead of arguing with those thoughts, I immediately go with the breath and the body scans, Anapanasati, Kayagatasati, and I just release and relax the sensations below. And as I'm lowering my awareness into the body, I'm gaining distance from those thoughts and I'm beginning to release the conditions or the foundations that those unskillful thoughts are resting upon. Finally, the last is one that I rarely practice. In fact, hardly ever. The Buddha says that there are some cases where we have to clench the teeth, beat down, constrain, and crush harmful thoughts with the power of our awareness. This is willpower. And he uses the example, just as a strong man seizing and attacking but weaker man who's aggressive. So the smaller, weaker man is aggressive, and he's starting a bar fight. He's like, you really are dumb fuck. You really, and the stronger man constrains him, holds him down, pushes him down so that he doesn't cause any more damage. And really what this is there's times that we just want to give up, We just want to do something that's going to be really harmful. We just want to, you know, break out of what we know is our practice and just lash out some way. And at those cases, when the first four approaches of investigating the thoughts, replacing them with skillful thoughts, of learning how to analyze and how to relax the body, if all these techniques don't work, and last by last, the only thing that's going to keep yourself from screaming is just sheer willpower, then that's when it's applicable. But I hope, like for me, you'll find that in almost all the course of your life and your practice, that the first four tools will be the tools that you need to relieve yourself from persistent visitors and to find peace with the skillful recollections of your spiritual practice. So I thank you very much, and it's now 10:13, and I don't know what that means. A couple of minutes for questions, so I thank you for this. Hi. Maybe right before dinner where we can talk.
Okay, you tell me when.
How about like
so like I'm going
right. I'm trying to think. Where are you going to be this day? Where do you get your generation here and outside doing the
I'm doing the walking here. Basically here and sitting and walking out here.
Okay. Let's take a look at my schedule. I think there's a time that we can fit you in so that we can have a nice interview.
Before that on Saturday, maybe we'll sit down with them. Okay. Or Sunday morning. best.